This is Renegade Broadcasting.
Everybody, happy Tuesday. Yeah, just to let everybody know, I've gotten swarmed for some reason with a bunch of emails, more than I usually get. I don't know why that is, but be patient. Most of them I can't answer until probably tomorrow night or Thursday morning. I'm away for a couple of days on my laptop, and so I'm not able to answer a lot of the emails I'm getting, but yeah, just be patient. I will get around to doing that. Especially notes requests. Definitely won't be able to get to that. I don't have. I gotta get around to transferring all my data onto my laptop one of these days. When I'm away, I'll just email myself notes for, you know, a few upcoming shows that I can cover while I'm away, but I need to transfer everything over. I got everything backed up on a external hard drive, but I need to back everything up on this computer as well. Anyway, a couple updates or addendum items on the Prince show. And thanks to some listeners that sent me this info. The local sheriff, I guess, when he reported on Prince's death, I didn't realize this, but he actually stated that, well, he referred to Prince as, quote, the victim. He said that the victim received CPR and was unresponsive. But he referred to Prince as a victim. You know, obviously some kind of Freudian slip. He wasn't supposed to use that word. You don't use that word, guys, unless, you know, something amiss went on. If he simply died the way that we're told, you wouldn't use that word. Victim involves somebody else doing something. And he said that right away, the day, you know, that Prince died. So nobody could say, oh, maybe he meant victim of, you know, an accidental overdose. Or no, that wasn't even known or known. They hadn't even made that story up yet at that point. So there's something definitely amiss with that. Anyway, here's something else interesting that was sent to me yesterday. The fact that Prince was found in an elevator just prior to his death becomes all the more disturbing when we consider the fact that he had talked about elevators on numerous occasions, apparently, in a negative context on different occasions. One specific one was when his friend and colleague L.A. Reid told Entertainment Tonight that, quote, one time when I was with him privately, he said, you know what the elevator is, right? And I said, no, what's the elevator? He said, well, the elevator is the devil. It scared me, he said. I don't like to talk like that. but he said that. So for me, it was like really haunting when I read that he was found in an elevator. So he said that the elevator represented the devil. Now, you know, this is very interesting, folks, because if you recall, a few weeks back, I talked about that bizarre death in the Cecil Hotel in L.A. that occurred, what, I don't know, 3 years ago or whatever, involving that Oriental woman. What the hell was her name now? I can't even remember. I can't remember now. But anyway, you might recall she was found in the water tank on top of the tower. And the reason, on top of the tower, on top of the hotel tower, you know. And the only reason that they discovered her body is because several of the customers in the hotel were complaining that the water was discolored, it was foul smelling, you know. They finally sent some workers up there to check it out, and there was her body. Anyway, in that, prior to her death, there was a video that was released of her, the last footage of her before she died. The last that anybody, you know, saw any of her, you know, prior to her death. And she was in an elevator. And then I mentioned how there was a movie, Black Water, I think was the name of it. Or Dark Water, that's what it was. Actually, two movies. One was made by some Japanese producer, and then Hollywood, a couple years later, did a remake of it, you know. All before she died. The movie involved, a woman in an elevator, and then she winds up, the exact same scenario that played out in real life, in advance. How many times we see that in Hollywood? But they put a heavy emphasis in the movie on the hotel elevator. They kept coming back to that same scene, so they were connecting the elevator with the final death of in the case of the movie, it was a little girl that fell into the accidentally she fell into the water tank, but it doesn't matter. It's the same theme. In a hotel, it involved an elevator, and then it involved, a body in the frickin' in the water tank. Anyway, there was another movie that came out several years ago. I saw it a couple years ago with some friends, 2 or 3 years ago. I can't remember the name of it. I think it was called The Devil. Some of you might have seen this. The whole movie revolves around an elevator. You know, there's maybe half a dozen people that are stuck in this elevator. And one by one, they're dying. Horrific deaths, you know. And, you know, so they're screaming for help. I guess there is a camera in there, but somehow the camera isn't able to catch what's going on at the time of the murders. The camera goes out, and then when it comes back on, somebody's dead. And, so they're freaking out, the still living occupants of the elevator, get us out of here, get us out of here. And then a little while later, again, the camera goes dead. And so the people in the control room can't see what's happening, and then, the camera comes back on, and sure enough, somebody else is dead. One by one, this keeps happening throughout the entire movie. And you realize at the end that the one doing the killing is supposed to be, quote, the devil. The devil keeps appearing, and killing somebody. But the impression is in the control room that it's somebody in the elevator, and they can't figure out who it is, and they're not able, to get a rescue team in there. They're trying, but they just can't get to them before these murders, before they can stop these murders. Anyway, my point is, isn't that interesting? In yet another movie, you have a scene with an elevator involving, quote, the devil. And now here you have Prince talking about how the elevator represents the devil. This has got to be something they use, guys, in MK Ultra sessions. As I mentioned when I talked about, you know, that murder in the hotel, probably it originated with the Alice in Wonderland story, you know, going down the rabbit hole. That theme seemed to pop up quite a bit in the movie, you know, Dark Water. And that's what the elevator shaft represented, going down the rabbit hole. Maybe the elevator shaft is an analogy to, you know, the tunnel to hell. Who knows? And they're twisted, frigged up thinking. But it's just very interesting that Prince made reference to that. Did he encounter the elevator theme during his, you know, MK Ultra programming? And now they decided to murder him in an elevator. God damn it, man. You can't ignore these points. You have to pay attention to them because they're in your face. So, you know, I didn't even think of the elevator theme. You know, when I put these notes together, shame on me, that should have jumped out at me. I just did that show a few weeks ago talking about that, you know, that bizarre elevator crap. Frickin' incredible, man. And remember how the woman, the Oriental woman that killed in the actual footage that was shot from the elevator camera, you know, it looked like she was on drugs. Even her own friend said, yeah, something's not right. She's not acting normal. She's gesturing bizarrely with her hands. Apparently, to nobody, there didn't seem to be anybody there. It seemed like she was talking to somebody, but there's nobody there. And then she comes back in the elevator, and she's acting very nervous and huddling in the corner and then peeking around the corner as though someone's there. But again, it doesn't seem like there was. If there was, they were deliberately remaining out of sight. Was it her handler? You know, was he remaining out of sight because they plan to release this video later? He didn't want to be seen because he's the guy that actually killed her. Nevertheless, they went out of their way, guys, to release this video. They wanted the video out there so that the few in the know who know about the elevator theme, apparently representing, quote, the devil, or is it Yahweh? I can't figure out. I can't remember now. Well, what's the difference? Anyway, it's like they're playing with you, throwing this out there. And now here we got the Prince murder involving an elevator. God damn it. I wonder how many other murders are going to be centered around the elevator theme. If anybody knows of any more that I might have missed, let me know. But they do like that elevator theme, and Prince's comment, very interesting. And here's another point another listener sent me. It is known now who the person was who found Prince. Remember I mentioned him yesterday, that initially they told us they didn't know who it was, and I hadn't heard otherwise. I thought they didn't know, but no, it has emerged who it was. Who the man who, quote, found Prince. Yeah, he found him, all right. Anyway, guess what persuasion he was. Guess what his tribal affiliations were. Goddamn Jew, ladies and gentlemen. His name was Andrew Kornfeld, a pre-med student. We're told that he might face drug charges. This is the most likely candidate for Prince's murder, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, how much you want to bet, nothing's going to happen to the guy if he, in fact, is the one that killed him or the one that they had, you know, that they used to do the deed. He'll get off one way or another. He's one of their own. Of course they're going to take care of him. Of course he's going to walk. But there's your man. I believe I said that yesterday. You know, if you can figure out who that was, you got your killer. Well, there you go. And then they commented that he was acting strange. He was talking, you know, like he didn't know where he was. That needs all to be looked into. But of course, they're not going to do that. Why did he, you know, disappear into obscurity? It's like he didn't want to be known. I don't even know how they figured out that he was the guy. But no surprise, it was a tribe member. God damn it. Anyway, another listener sent me some interesting lyrics. I'll get back to the discussion from yesterday with David Carradine and Robin Williams momentarily. But I got to read these lyrics from a Prince song called Colonized Mind. Very interesting. Lots of obvious MK Ultra overtones in this song. It's like, you know, Prince was trying to let his listeners know that he was toyed with. Many artists have done this over the years. And, you know, apparently they don't care. They let them do it. Maybe they want them to do it because it's very subtle. They don't come out and say, you know, you've got to know the background of the thing to read between the lines and know what they're actually talking about. So they probably either don't care or actually want you to do that. But nevertheless, these lyrics, when you read them, it's like Prince was screaming out, trying to let people know. And how many times did he say, you know, did he warn up-and-coming music artists, you know, to not enter into a contract with the big record companies, stay the hell away from it, the trap that it is. So, you know, just like Prince, many other celebrities over the years have done the same thing, sending out warning signals, you know, stay back. In a way, guys, it must suck to have, you know, a musical talent or an acting talent. On the one hand, you want to pursue that as your career. That's what you were born with. You have a natural talent, a natural affinity for it. And so, yeah, you want to, for some people, it's not just about making money. It's just your passion. You want to do it, you know. But in doing it, it's a catch-22 because you're exposing yourself to a bunch of scumbags and an environment that's downright, you know, unwholesome, unhealthy, even deadly. So in a way, you know, because of this twisted, frigged up world, the way it works, having talents like that is actually, in a lot of ways, a curse, not a blessing. But anyway, here's the lyrics. He said, want to talk about it, colonized mind, upload the evolution principle. You see a rock on the shore and say it's always been there. Download, no responsibility. Do what you want, nobody cares. Upload the master race idea. What do you think he's talking about there? Which master race? He's talking about the programming he received. Upload the master race idea, genetically disposed to rule the world. Well, what do you know about that? What master race do we know believes that they were genetically disposed to rule the world? Download, he said, future full of isolated boys and girls. Isolated boys and girls. There's your MK Ultra guys, isolated from the rest of the world, toyed with, subjected to abuse, trauma, to induce multiple personality syndrome. upload. And what is he talking about here, download, upload? He's talking about mind control programming. That's what he's talking about. What you download, what they download into your mind. And then the upload is what they want you to portray to the world once you've been programmed. Upload, the two-party system, that's what you're to portray to the world, your support for the two-party system. The lesser of two dangers, illusion of choice, and he spells two, by the way, T-O instead of T-W-O. It looks like a misprint, but I think that's done on purpose. There's some hidden message in there. Who knows? Anyway, download their form of fascism, he says. Nothing really ever changes. You never had a voice. You never had a voice. He's talking undoubtedly both to the general public and about his own self. Once you're caught up in this dragnet, you don't have a voice. You know, you become their mouthpiece, or you either lose your career or your life. You project whatever image they want you to project, which is one of the reasons why I say, you know, even though Prince does seem to have been and probably was, didn't have much of a choice, their little whore initially, you know, projecting all kinds of immorality and filth in his music and videos. Yeah, that's a given. I mean, in the music industry, you don't have a choice. You've got to do it. But clearly, in the end, I see him as having made a turnaround. He wanted to distance himself from it. And look what happened to him. And look what's happened to so many like him over the years that have, you know, done that very thing. Frickin' Whitney Houston. Her biggest downfall, guys, was when she shamed, was it Netanyahu on stage, or was it Ariel Sharon? I think it was Ariel Sharon. She was on Israeli television over there visiting in Israel, and he was on stage. He went over to shake her hand. She shook her head no and pulled back. She wouldn't take his hand. That was probably her death knell right there. This is what happens so very many times, guys. You stand up to them. You don't even have to say anything. Just your refusal to bow spells your end. Anyway, he goes on to say in his lyrics, "Listen to me one time. If you look, you're sure gonna find throughout mankind's history a colonized mind." Look at that. If you look, you're sure gonna find. Oh boy, haven't we covered that quite a bit on this show? Going back in history, you can see the colonized mind. It's not something new. It's not a modern phenomenon, is it? It's been going on all along. Obviously, Prince had done just that. He realized that this game is age old and that the superior race, at least that's what they view themselves as, this superior race has been at the helm of this whole thing the whole time. The ones that are genetically predisposed to rule the world. God damn it, you can't get more clearer than this. All you have to do is be mildly aware of how this world operates and who the string pullers are. You can see exactly what he's trying to say here. But it's obscure enough that, you know, the average dope isn't going to figure it out. Lyrics like this are profound. You can tell he knew what he was talking about here. And he said that it was an age-old game. Anyway, the one in power makes law under which the colonized fall. He says, without God, it's just the blind leading the blind. Well, unfortunately, he didn't live long enough to figure that one out. He got deeply in the clutches of, the Jehovah Witness cult. I almost hate to call them a cult because most Christian cults label the Jehovah Witness as a cult simply because they don't accept the Trinity. They are a cult for other reasons. All of them are cults, but nevertheless, I do have a slight bit of more respect for Jehovah Witnesses, again, because they stand up against mainstream churchianity and their phony Trinitarian BS. And like I said, a lot of them, they are sincere people, sincerely duped, but sincere nonetheless. And so I believe that's what Prince was, with his conversion, quote unquote. I think he had a genuine desire to, to mend his ways, that he had a conscience and he was acting on it, like when he wrote these lyrics. And his answer to the problem, unfortunately, was the great Yahya, not realizing that Yahya is the problem. I was thinking about this yesterday, how devil worshippers, guys, are just as confused, are just as deceived as Bible dupes. Do you know why? Well, obviously they're deceived, but they're deceived in the same way that Bible dupes are. This is a profound point. Devil worshippers hate religion. They hate Yahweh, they hate the Bible, but they hate it for the wrong reason. A lot of them get into it. I'll tell you, this is why I became a fan of the occult when I was in my teens, not just because Jimmy Page was into it and I wanted to emulate my Guitar Hero, but I was in my rebellion phase. Most teens are, and that's how they get into things like this. I wasn't a Satan worshiper. But ultimately, I get into some dark stuff, the Ouija board and, all kinds of bizarre occult things. And I didn't get into, again, outright Satanism, all the filth that goes along with it. But I was heading in that direction. I was fascinated, with Aleister Crowley. Luckily, I didn't read too deep into him, with the blood sacrifice filth. But my point is, I get into the occult because I wanted to get as far away from, I was in rebellion against my, religious upbringing. To me, it held me back from having fun in life. And in a lot of ways it did. Unfortunately, though, once again, I went to the opposite extreme. I wanted to become the antithesis of what I was. A lot of teens go through that. They want to rebel. Anyway, my point is, when you go to the ultimate extreme and become a devil worshiper, you want to be the opposite of what you think is good. Yahweh. Yahweh isn't good. So Satanists are just as duped about Yahweh as Yahweh worshipers are. If you want to be the antithesis of Yahweh, you have to embrace goodness, not evil. Because Yahweh is, in fact, evil. If you think Yahweh is good, you're just as duped as the Bible dupes are. All you're doing is responding in a different way. Bible dupes, because they think Yahweh is good, supposedly want to try to live a good life, because they think Yahweh is good. Devil worshippers want to live a bad life because they think Yahweh is good. You understand my point? They're both duped. Devil worshippers and Yahweh worshippers both think Yahweh is good. They both got it wrong. Short break, guys. I'll be right back.
Divide and Conquer was never about placing a line between whites and blacks. that was always going to naturally happen because we are so different. It was always about whites being turned against fellow whites.
Racist this and racist that. You don't hear blacks calling each other racists, but you do hear whites calling other whites racist. You also hear white men calling white women bitches and white women calling white men pigs. It's time to cut the shit.
White men
and white women
need to become white men
and white women again. Because at the moment, white women are no longer white women.
And white men are no longer white men.
It's okay to be a lady.
It's okay to be a man.
It's okay to be white.
But how's that for a kick in the ass, guys? If you want to truly be opposed to Yahweh and all the evil that Yahweh represents, then, in that sense, you're a Satanist. How does that grab you? If Satan stands for everything opposed to what Yahweh stands for, then Satanism actually is something good. Unfortunately, Satanism, the way it's practiced in the world, it's evil. The irony of it all. It shows what idiots they are. If you are truly opposed to Yahweh and want to call yourself a Satanist, you should embrace all that is good and wholesome, because Yahweh doesn't embrace all that's good and wholesome. If you want to, to be the antithesis of Yahweh, you shouldn't be practicing human sacrifice now, should you? Because Yahweh was all for human sacrifice. Yahweh commanded human sacrifice, didn't he? Documented that thoroughly in the past. If you missed those shows, drop me a note. I'll send you the show outlines. There are many passages in the Bible where Yahweh commanded specifically that the firstborn were to be dedicated to him. They are reserved for destruction. They shall be put to death. Yahweh was for human sacrifice. So if you embrace human sacrifice, you are a Yahwist, not a Satanist. You are not opposed to Yahweh. You are all for him. You got to love it, guys. Satanism mocks the mass. They have a black mass. Everything is done to mock the Bible. They'll have an inverted cross, but in reality, they're actually in league with Yahweh. They don't fall for the chicanery that tries to, dress him up so he looks good. That's what Christianity does. They try to make Yahweh look good. They'll focus on those few scant passages where Yahweh's wearing the little masquerade costume, so he looks good, but he's really the devil himself. It's so goddamn twisted. If you've ever seen the Ghost Adventures show, they'll talk about how the devil does everything in threes to mock the sacred Trinity. This Trinity isn't sacred. It's a lie. It's a freaking scam, goddamn it. The whole Bible's a scam. But if you want to believe that there's an entity called the devil who's evil, why would he mock something that is itself evil that everybody thinks is good? It's a joke. The whole thing is so goddamn... Ay, ay, ay. But you just got to love it, because these Satanists think that they're opposing something good that isn't good. if you're so in love with evil Satanists, you should be worshiping Yahweh, you dumbasses. If you really want to oppose Yahweh, if you're really, against Yahweh, once again, you should be embracing that all that is good and wholesome. This world is nothing but one twisted frickin' irony. Everything is the opposite of what it should be. People's thinking is totally twisted. But there's the ultimate irony for you. A genuine Satanist. You know, people would say, what are you saying, you're a Satanist? Only when you understand what Yahweh really is all about. And if you understand, quote, Satanism to be in opposition to Yahweh, then real Satanism actually embraces all that is good and wholesome. Real Yahwists embrace all that is evil. If you claim to be a Yahwist, worshiping Yahweh, and yet you have a heart, you have compassion, you're not really a Yahwist. You're a duped Yahwist. You don't understand what that bastard really is and what he represents. The irony of it all, isn't it? Everything is backwards. The Yahwists think that they're following something good. They're not. They're following the devil himself. The devil worshippers think that they got it right because they're evil and following. No. You need to trade places. If you're a Yahwist with a conscience, you need to call yourself a Satanist, really. And if you're a Satanist because you really are genuinely evil and love evil, you need to call yourself a Yahwist. God damn it, the irony of it all. What a frigged up mess. Anyway, these lyrics continue on. Prince says, upload a joint venture record deal. It's just another way another man can still sleep while he's sticking you with the bill. So here he's saying, upload, right? Let yourself be programmed by your record company so they can control you. Sticking you with the bill, you know, they're going to take advantage of you, suck you dry, live off of your talent, you know, take advantage of you, screw you in every deal, every contract. That's what you're to upload. Shut your mouth, do what you're told, and let yourself be used and abused and exploited. Download, he said, a temporary acquisition of fleeting fame and fortune. Ooh, look what he's saying here. He's looking back at his life and saying, is it worth it? You know, you struggle to get to, quote, the top, only to realize you're really not at the top. You're at the bottom. They're crushing you beneath their feet. What did you gain from it? How many times you hear, you know, musical artists or even actors, you know, say that they sold their soul to the devil. What's his name? Well, there's been several that have done that, but why can't I think of that bastard's name? It may be the devil, or it may be the Lord, but you gotta serve somebody. Well, what the hell's his name there? He said he did that. Wow, I'm really tired this morning, folks. I can't think of the hell. Anyway, Dylan, Bob Dylan, that's it. He said that he sold his soul to the devil. Again, whether you believe it's a devil or not, it doesn't matter. What he's really saying is he sold his soul to frickin' Yahweh, who is, quote, the devil, if you understand the devil to represent something evil. Yeah, that's what Yahweh is. He sold his soul to that force. And in doing so, you lose who you are. Everything that, you know, that Hollywood represents, guys, is goddamn evil. And if you're not evil to begin with, you must become evil to get ahead and to maintain that status. Or at least you got to swallow your conscience. You got to keep your mouth shut. You got to play the game. You got to play parts or sing lyrics that are against what you stand for. You don't have a choice. You've got to do it. If you don't, you're not only going to lose your career, but probably your life. You become a slave. And that's exactly what he wrote slave on his cheek, remember? You become their slave. You become their bitch. You don't have a say. So once again, don't be too quick to criticize celebrities who portray, you know, immorality in roles they play in movies or in lyrics in their songs. You know, don't be too quick to judge and condemn, because you don't know the hell they've been put through and the fact that they really don't have a choice. No doubt there are some that are really into evil, that gorge themselves in it and love it. But a good many of them, they're not that way. And don't like that they have to put crap like that in their songs, but just, again, don't have a choice. Or they're so mind-controlled, they've been so thoroughly MK-Ultra'd that, you know, they're just basically animated corpses. They don't even have the mental wherewithal anymore. You know, they've been so used and abused over the years. They're not capable. You ever wonder, many people have wondered over the years, wow, on stage they seem to be so with it, but, you know, when they're in interviews, I can't believe some of the nonsensical things these celebrities say. Why do you think that is? They can conveniently say, oh yeah, they're just into that drug scene. Some of them, their minds have been so completely toyed with, they have permanent brain damage. They're MK-Ultra'd so that, yes, when they're on stage performing, they can do so flawlessly. They're like robots who've been programmed. But once off stage, they probably put them into their other alternate now, and they can't handle. Why do you think a lot of them are depressed, guys? A lot of them don't even realize how toyed with they are. They probably put them in their alternate just to go on stage. They forget everything. They become that other person, that other personality. And then later they put them back into that traumatized personality. And they don't know how to handle it. You know, they don't know how to deal with the fame and the lights. It's too much. It's too overwhelming. They probably don't even know that they have an alternate personality. Most of them don't. I mean, look at, oh, Jesse Ventura one time in his conspiracy theory show interviewed a guy who said he was MK-Ultra. I don't doubt it for one minute. There's been books written on this by former victims of MK-Ultra who tell similar stories where, you know, they'll find a ticket stub. That's what this guy said. He found a ticket stub in his bureau. Didn't know how it got there, but it indicated that he flew, I forget where he said now, somewhere in the Caribbean or something. And he was there for 3 days. He has no recollection at all of going to the Caribbean, nor does he know what he did there, but he expects that he was probably sent on a killing mission. He was sent there to assassinate somebody. He doesn't know who or you know, any of the details. And, you know, they could subject him to hypnosis. They could even torture him. He couldn't ever tell them what he did because he doesn't know. He can only tell them if he's in his alternate personality. But you have to know the trigger word to get him into that personality. If you don't know it, you can't retrieve that memory. That's how it works, guys. Can you imagine these sick bastards? That, you know, they knew the mind worked this way, and they knew by subjecting someone to severe trauma, to abuse from the time they were kids, that you can literally program the mind to work that way, like a machine. And that's all these people are to them, machines, slaves to do their bidding. Jump when we say jump, sit when we say sit. They don't have a choice. Only when they've wrecked you to the point where you don't care anymore and you become their willing servant, will they leave you alone? Yeah, he's one of us. We don't have to worry. But if you show any hint that you're not happy with your situation, ultimately, when they can't manipulate you anymore and when it seems like you're going to be a problem for them, they will kill you. How many celebrities they've done this with over the years, guys? All right, we've gotten all we can get out of this guy. He's not a willing participant anymore. It's time to arrange his death. And we'll utilize all kinds of occult symbology. We'll put it right out there in people's faces. And they won't even get it. Makes me think of that son of a bitch theology professor there, the head of the department, who told me, I guess it doesn't matter if you tell people about what you found out, because who's going to believe you anyway? That's how they think, guys. That's how they think in Hollywood. That's how they think in your goddamn government. That's how they think in the steepled corporations called churches. All of them. They all work that way. They all have that attitude. We don't want the public to know that we're scamming them. But I guess it really doesn't matter, because who's going to believe you anyway? Just like when you expose these Hollywood murders. Every time you turn around, one of them is dropping off. People don't see this. God damn it, it's been going on for decades. Well, you know, people don't see that they're getting scammed with the housing bubble and the goddamn bailout and the 9/11 BS, you know, on and on and on and on. In your face, outrageous criminality, hidden in plain sight. They love it, guys. They get off on it. They love that they can commit such outrageous frickin' crimes that rival anything in human history. I mean, just so goddamn blatant. And yet, most people don't catch on. That's their magic. They call it magic. Forget Harry Potter. You want to know real magic? That's it right there. That they can get away with goddamn outrageous crimes, so obvious to those who have even half of a functioning neuron between their goddamn ears. You can't miss it, but yet the swelling masses do entirely. They even put those little popcorn trail hints out there. Not even hints. They almost come right out and tell you what the hell is going on. But because people are in such a deep comatose state, the general public as a whole basically is MKUltra, isn't it? Without having to have been subjected to, trauma-based abuse. To control people's minds, you don't even have to do that. You got to do that if you want to get them to engage in things that are totally against decency, yes. But to deceive them, no, you don't need to. You don't need drugs, although that helps a lot, and they certainly get a lot of people on drugs today, don't they? But you don't even need them. Just give them a boob tube. And you will turn them into mush minds, incapable of thinking for themselves, incapable of critically analyzing anything and drawing conclusions based on what used to be called common sense. It's not common anymore. Look what they get away with. Most people, you know, you tell them, hey, look, don't you think it's a little strange that Prince was found dead in an elevator? They're going to look at you like, what the hell are you talking about? What's the big deal? They don't understand these little key words and the symbology, the occult connections. They don't get it. They probably never will. If you can't get them to see that they were screwed, Jewed, and tattooed through the bailout, through the mortgage foreclosure crisis, through the wide open borders fiasco, and on it goes, then forget, you know, keying them into talk of elevators. Forget it. Ain't gonna happen. Oh, the deception. The MK Ultra-ing of society is complete, isn't it? Anyway, coming back to the lyrics here, I'll never finish this. He says, download a temporary acquisition of fleeting fame and fortune, nothing to leave in your will. Hey, 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 he says. Nothing leaving your will because they drained you dry. For those fleeting moments of fame, you thought you were accomplishing something great, and yet they've destroyed you in the process. Upload, he said, a child with no father. Download, no respect for authority. Upload a child with no mother. Download a hard time showing love. You can't miss this, guys. Upload, he's talking about the programming that he and other celebrities have to go through. Upload a child with no father. Who becomes your father? Your handlers. Many of them are orphaned. You know, I have a whole show on that coming up. The orphan theme that continually pops up in movies, in songs. It's unbelievable. And the occultic overtones with that. The orphan theme, guys, repeats over and over, as we'll see. I should follow this discussion up with, you know, going over the, I'll have to do that soon. That's very interesting. But the orphan theme is so popular because if you're orphaned, they have more control over you, of course. You don't have parental oversight. You're more easily made their slave. And that's the ultimate high for them, too. When they can get you as a kid to look up to them and respect them, and then they traumatize you. The very people that they were looking up to are the ones now abusing them. When you shock a young mind, you know, with that kind of treatment, you mold them so they don't know which way is up or down. All they know is what their handler tells them, that they have been brainwashed into thinking that, you know, they're there to assist you, to help you. That's what they do with MK Ultra mind control, trauma-based mind control. They're abusing you one minute, and the next minute they're embracing you and encouraging you with, you know, fancy talk. And then the next day they're back to abusing you again. Up one minute, down the next. Frigging with your mind. And so you wind up, it's the only authority you know. It's the only, you know, for a lot of kids that are abused in MK Ultra, that's all they know from the time they're very young, is this one person, their handler. And even though he's a monstrous bastard one minute, why, he's so embracing the next. They're crying out for anything. And since that's all they've got, they cling to that. So they develop this love-hate relationship. Think what that does to the mind. It shatters the mind. And in order for you to deal with it, what does the brain do? It develops multiple personality syndrome, which is exactly where they want you. God damn the bastards. And that's it, guys. Once you've got that, you're ruined for life. You'll never be the same again. Doesn't matter how much counseling you go to. Medications, yeah, whatever. So as though that helps anybody anyway. But you understand my point. It doesn't matter how much therapy you go through, you will never recover from it. The damage is complete. It's permanent. You don't even have to develop multiple personality syndrome. Just to be abused as a kid at all leaves you with permanent scars that you never recover from. But once you've been shattered, once you've got an alternate, yeah, it's permanent. Your mind stores memories that you don't even know are there. That's frickin' scary. It's so traumatic that the mind suppresses it, and that's when it develops this multiple personality thing, to disassociate from all the trauma. Oh, man, you can just go on talking about this forever. It's so goddamn evil. Pure, unadulterated evil. And this is what most actors and, you know, musical performers, this is what they're subjected to from the time they're very young. Prince, you know, demonstrated a very astute musical talent from the time he was a little kid. They look for that and they swoop right down. We want to get control of this kid right from the start. Yeah, he's got talent. We'll be able to utilize that later. We'll make a lot of money off him. And we'll be able to demoralize society. They watch you from very early on. What do you think Hollywood is known within Hollywood circles, anyway? As, you know, Corey Feldman had said, why do you think it's known for pedophilia, guys? Not only because these twisted bastards want to get their rocks off, the perverted little fucks that they are, pardon my French, but they do it for another reason. Subjecting these kids to abuse from early on does produce multiple personality syndrome, if they survive, if they're not killed, or if they don't kill their own selves, like Corey, what's his name, Corey Rowe? Feldman's friend committed suicide. He couldn't deal with the, you know, the memories coming back now and haunting him of his abuse. Couldn't deal with it. It so ruined him that he took his life. How many have done that too? This is evil on a scale that you just can't even get your head around. And it's probably just as well, because it's so goddamn disgusting and outright depressing that the world works this way. You don't want to even dwell on it too long, because it's just so freaking enraging that this stuff goes on, and on a very grand scale. All the pedal rings that have been exposed over the years, guys, involving high-profile politicians, entertainers. All right, guys, short break, be right back.
As history is written by the victors, so all we really hear about is the mass murder of a thoroughly debunked 6 million. We are never told about the suffering of the German people during that so-called good war. And if it is brought up, we are told that those Nazis deserved it. Firebombed, raped, tortured, slaughtered in the most sickening ways imaginable. But the world has been left in the dark about these atrocities. Until now. Hellstorm is setting the record straight. Watch the documentary that has shaken the world. Available for free at hellstormdocumentary.com.
And love strange, so we learn the dark.
This is Renegade Broadcasting.
Guys, anyway, doing a lot of rambling here, but oh man, when you step back and look at the big picture, when you look what's been going on here, when you see, I used to be very judgmental of Hollywooders, you know, those scumbags, look how evil they are, you know, and no doubt some of them are genuinely evil, they don't care, they're willing participants in what they do, but no, guys, I would venture to say probably the majority of them can't stand the lifestyle that they found themselves forced into. They don't have a choice. And once you're caught up in it, there's no getting out. It's like the, you know, like what you hear about the mafia, you know, once you're in it, you don't get out. And you really don't. You're stuck with it for life. You don't have a choice. You say the wrong thing, do the wrong thing, you're going to arouse the suspicion of the overlords and they'll come down on you with a fury. So you just keep your mouth shut. You don't just fear for your own life, you fear for your family. That's a bigger factor right there. Some people would probably just, you know, probably prefer that they would kill them, you know, all right, just kill me and get it over with. But they keep their mouth shut for concern about their family. They don't care about their own selves. Their lives are so miserable, they would just as soon have them, you know, kill them. But they keep their mouth shut out of concern for their family. And they play that trump card big time. Oh, yes. They'll throw it in your face. We know you don't care about your own life, but we know you care about your family. That's essentially what they did to me, guys, when they were trying to buy me off to keep my mouth shut about my findings on the Trinity. They called me in for a meeting. I've mentioned this, you know, several times in the past. They actually dangled that carrot in front of me, my family. They said, well, you know, we don't expect an answer right now, an answer as to whether or not I would agree to keep my mouth shut so I can get a job and, you know. We don't expect an answer right now. Take some time and think it over. But in the process of thinking it over, we're sure you're going to want to consider your family's future. We know you have a son, and we understand you have a baby on the way, don't you? Yes, that's right. So we're sure you're going to want to take their future into consideration when you make your decision. Imagine the little bastards. We know you want a good future for your kids. And we can promise you that. They're waving that carrot. Years ago, when I used to frequent Pal Talk, I had this one guy, you know, we had this big debate. I chewed up and spit out this one guy. I used to be, you know, I was really into that. I loved it. I used to love to debate. And I would really get into it. I would use all kinds of different, you know, voices, and it was kind of it was kind of entertaining. People used to love to come into rooms to hear me talk, you know, because I would just go in these rants. Sometimes I would get so excited. I don't seem to be able to do it anymore. I'm sure I could, but your mind has to be in the right frame to do it. You ever hear those commercials where the guy talks a mile a minute, you know, crams 15 words into 1 second? I used to be able to do that. And again, if I put my mind to it, I probably could still do it, but I don't even want to, because in order to do that, you got to get yourself so excited that, you know, it's not good for high blood pressure. So I just stay away from that. It's actually not healthy. But, you know, people used to love it. I could just blow someone out of the water, in no time. Anyway, why did I get into that? So this one day, I had just finished a debate, and this guy calls me into a private chat. He was in the room listening. He really liked it. And so he's telling me, hey, I see you got a real talent there for debating and public speaking, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you like the debate, huh? He says, yeah. And so much so that I want to ask you, where do you see yourself in the next 5 years? Immediately, I knew where he was going. That guy had Jew written all over him. Of course, at that time, I wasn't Jew-wise. I wasn't saying the Jew word, you know. I was just talking about 9/11 being an inside job. You see, guys, they don't care if you talk about stuff like that, as long as you don't mention them. They don't care. They really don't. In fact, they kind of like it because they can use you as a rebel rouser to get people, you know, to turn against the government instead of the string pullers controlling the government. Don't forget, I've said many times, guys, before, it's not the government that's evil. The government is a glove. It's only the hand inside the glove that can direct the government to either do good or evil, depending on whose hand is in that glove. So, you know, it's not the government we need to hate. It's the hand in the government glove. And so they would love for you to turn against the government, i.e. the glove, never going after the hand in the glove. They don't, you know, they not only don't care, they actually want you to do that, because that can encourage people to rise up, and then they can use that to introduce martial law. So they really don't care if the public finds out about 9/11. Sure, they're not going to come out and tell you openly about it in the news. But they would love a small faction to rise up and you know, try to engage in an overthrow of the government or something. That would suit them just fine. And so they love to use people that can get public attention and rouse the public. He was dangling the carrot in front of me. Where do you see yourself? You can go places, you know, and I can help make that happen. He wanted me to think that he was some important big, I don't even know who he was. He never gave me his name. I never asked. I get out of that room, you know, pretty quick. I said, oh, no, thanks. Not interested. I knew what that would involve. I knew he wanted to, you know, exploit me, take control of me. And that's before I even knew about the J factor. I just smelled a rat and got away from it. But how many people, unfortunately, guys, get lured in by an offer like that? Yeah, they see dollar signs and maybe even fame and, oh, that's great, you know. Not knowing that they're sticking their head right in the lion's mouth. But anyway, coming back to these lyrics, Prince said, upload a child with no father. That means the mind programming. That's what he was uploaded with, or what he was programmed with. You know, you have no future. You really, I don't even know if he was an orphan or not, but even if he had a father, he probably, obviously what he's saying here is he didn't have a close relationship with him. So he looked to his handlers as father figures. That's what they want. That's what they want you to upload into your head. We're your dada and your mama. And then he says, download no respect for authority. That's what he wanted to, or what they wanted him to project. Once you got the upload that you either have no parents or no real parents who care about you, your handlers are your parents. Once you have that uploaded in your head, now from there, what you're to download to others is no respect for authority. That's exactly what he's saying here. Upload a child with no mother, download a hard time showing love. You can't show love. Why? Because it's been stolen from you by your handlers, your programmers. Jesus Christ, you can't miss this. It's so obvious. These lyrics are ripe with meaning. So, you know, you can request the notes or just go online and look it up. That's what I did. A listener clued me into the song. He said, you know, check out this song. It's really good. So all I did is just search for Colonized Mind lyrics or Prince song Colonized Mind lyrics, and boom, there they were. Check them out. Ripe with meaning. Listen to the message he was trying to convey here. He ends off by saying, if you look, you're sure gonna find throughout mankind's history a colonized mind. The one in power makes law under which the colonized fall. And again, he says, without God, it's just the blind leading the blind. Well, sorry, Prince, but you got that part wrong. When you follow that thing, it is the blind leading the blind. Anyway, but nevertheless, you got to respect his sincerity here, his disgust with the whole system and how it worked. But notice how he said, if you look, you're sure going to find throughout mankind's history a colonized mind. Yeah, if you look. Most people, of course, don't look. Most people who study history aren't looking for the pattern. They're not looking to see that, oh my God, this same thing has been going on all along, you know, blah, blah, blah. No, they're not looking for that, so they're not going to find it. You can only find what you're actually looking for most of the time. If you don't know something is lost, you're not even going to look for it. And then if you find it, you might not even recognize it for what it is. That's how society works. People don't know there's something to be found. And so even if they stumble on it, they probably won't even recognize it. Anyway, let's get back to our notes from yesterday. Jeez. More than half the show here. I've been rambling. Coming back to the death scene for Carradine here, he was found with his neck having a 3-inch wide ligature, set of ligature marks that ran from ear to ear, clearly indicating that he had been strangled to death with great force. Again, this was noted, and still they say, oh yeah, he died accidentally, he hung himself accidentally, you know, or maybe he was committing suicide. It doesn't matter, guys. If you die accidentally from, you know, the autoerotic thing, or if you just simply hang yourself, you're not going to have these deeply etched ligature marks in your neck. That results from extreme force, not simply from hanging yourself where your own body's weight is pulling you down and cutting off oxygen. No, those kind of marks result from a tight, tight pulling of the rope around the neck. He was choked to death and then later hung. My guess is, you know, his hands were tied, so he couldn't resist so easily. Probably drugged, then had his hands tied in case he came to, whatever, and then was strangled. And then they hung his body to make it look like he had hung himself. Probably not caring to untie his hands because they figured, well, it doesn't matter. The cops aren't going to do anything anyway. We're well connected. They're going to cover for us. And that's all they did. That's exactly what they did. The cops were lying, the Bangkok police. They were lying, ladies and gentlemen. They knew that there was the footprint on the bed. They knew about the ligature marks, you know, on and on and on. They knew somebody else had been there. They lied and covered it up. Well, that's no, people might say, well, yeah, I guess I can understand that happening. That was Bangkok. Are you freaking serious? You don't think the goddamn police here do that, especially when they're told by the feds, shut up. Back off, look the other way. They do it all the time. Always have. Jesus Christ, just a few weeks ago, I did a show, over a month ago, I guess it was, several shows documenting police corruption down through the years, collaborating with the feds. And every time the feds told them to back off, like the good little puppy dogs that they are, that's exactly what they did. Anyway. But, you know, these marks were not made by simply Carradine supposedly hanging himself, which would simply have cut off the blood supply to the brain. They weren't made by the force of his own weight. They were made by someone tightly putting the noose around his neck. Anyway, Carradine's neck showed that he was violently and forcefully strangled, which would explain once again why his hands were tied behind his back. You can't tie your hands behind your back and be masturbating, guys. Unless, if you want to assume this, maybe he was using his feet. Oh, give me a frickin' break, man. How the public buys this freaking crap. So you see, they don't care about trashing the guy's reputation, smearing it in the mud. Maybe he did, supposedly, according to his ex-wife. I don't trust that little bitch, by the way. But nevertheless, she writes a book later so she can make fat wads of cash off of her dead husband and trash his name in the dust. Can you really trust somebody like that? Why would you even buy a book like that? Literally, yellow journalism. A little sleazy bitch just wanted to make some money off of him. And so she's trashing him. If she cared about her husband, why is she going to drag his name in the dust and go into his, you know, his private life? That's nobody's goddamn business unless she's just a sleazy little bitch wanting to make money off him. That's all that we're looking at there. That's all it was. Little opportunist. But even if he was into that, you know, again, it's nobody's business. Who cares? Shut the hell up. But even if he was into that, it doesn't matter. That's not why he died. That has nothing to do with his death. How do you even tie your hands up at all, let alone behind your back, while you've got a neck around your throat and you're hanging? I mean, you know, it doesn't take a genius to figure out this was a goddamn murder. It was never investigated as such, even though, you know, a numbskull could clearly see that this was a murder. And the public buys this slop? Interestingly, both Carradine's agent, Chuck Binder, and his brother, Robert, insist that David was murdered. Well, of course. We don't need them to tell us that, but yeah, they smelled a rat. They were demanding some answers, but no answers have ever been offered. They have no desire. They didn't from the beginning have a desire to look into this. Even his lawyer. But, you know, how convenient, guys, that they planned his murder when he was overseas. It's a lot easier to sweep that under the rug, and they can write it off as, well, you know, it's Bangkok, it's out of our hands. Even his lawyer, Vicky Roberts, was quoted by the June 6th, 2009 Daily Mail as saying, quote, I believe that there may have been foul play. Well, obviously. But all these people saying the same thing, something's wrong here, you know, something doesn't add up, but nothing has ever been done about it. Another important and ignored piece of evidence, besides the fact that David's hands were tied, is the fact that a footprint, well, I'd mentioned this earlier, yeah, a footprint was found on the bed. that didn't match David's shoes. It wasn't even his shoe size. So again, so much for there having been no sign of struggle or no sign of anyone else in the room. That's what they said. Can you imagine? Anyway, let's look at now some parallels between his death and Robin Williams, guys. He's also said to have died from autoerotic asphyxiation on August 11, 2014, and then later they mutated it into suicide. And again, guys, this sounds so much like, you know, the deaths of Sonny Bono and Michael Kennedy within a week of each other due to the same alleged cause, hitting a tree while skiing. Jesus Christ, man. Anyway, most interestingly, not long before Williams' death, an episode of Family Guy was aired in which Peter Griffin was cursed with the ability to turn everything he touched into Robin Williams, sort of like, you know, the King Midas character. This drove Peter to madness in the episode, which in turn drove him to attempt suicide. And, of course, the Robin Williams death, just like that of David Carradine, was connected both with, you know, an autoerotic hanging and suicide. So you're basically left to decide. We gave you two options. You can decide which one it is. Did he hang himself deliberately? Or in the case of Williams, we're told that he had some knife cuts. So they want you to think that, well, hanging himself didn't seem to be working, so he decided to cut his wrists instead. Are you serious? Think about it for a minute, guys. Do you know how painful and how excruciatingly slow a death like that is? To bleed yourself to death as you're traumatized with the pain of your cut wrists, especially when you have a lot of money at your disposal. You can come up with all kinds of creative and less painful. Why, there's drugs you can get that will put you right out and, you know, you'll die in a coma without experiencing any pain. You won't even know what hit you. There's so many ways you can kill yourself that are less gory, that won't leave your body to be found by loved ones and be traumatized and won't scandalize you. I'm sorry, guys. You can get rid of yourself in ways that aren't so painful and gory. No, I'm not buying it. Not buying it at all. But it gets even stranger. In addition to the bizarre Family Guy episode, a movie called World's Greatest Dad has a scene where Robin Williams' character finds his son dead with a belt around his neck. Williams supposedly had a belt around his neck when he was found dead. The son in the movie had died naturally from an accidental autoerotic asphyxiation death. Isn't that just a little bit too strange, ladies and gentlemen? Once again, we have Hollywood telling us in advance what's going to happen, what they arranged to happen. I'll tell you guys, just like with David Carradine, obviously did not hang himself, obviously was not engaging in autoerotic asphyxiation. He was strangled and then placed in the closet to give the impression that he hung himself while his hands were yet frickin' tied. Yeah, whatever. The same with Williams. I would bet my life on it that he was murdered and then placed in the closet. Who knows what other evidence, you know, was in that room that we're not told about. They totally de-emphasized the footprint found on Carradine's bed. it came out much later, obscurely, and we had a one paper here, another one over there, and you know, it didn't get much attention. You ask most people about Carradine's death, they don't even know about the goddamn footprint. As a matter of fact, I didn't know about the footprint until, you know, last week when I put these notes together. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ, I've heard about that. Yeah, of course. Because that turns the whole official story completely upside down. So if and when facts like this emerge, it's always much later when it doesn't matter anymore. The person's been cremated or their body has rotted enough in the ground so that, you know, that evidence now, you can't even prove it. You can't exhume the body and it's not going to matter, you know. Anyway, but yeah, the son in this movie died from accidental asphyxiation. Isn't that just a little bit strange, ladies and gentlemen? And not so surprisingly, yes, Williams's body was cremated shortly after his death, just like Prince's body. So you can't conduct an investigation now by having the body exhumed and, you know, examined. No. Case closed. Nothing suspicious here. Move on. Initially, it was reported that Williams had cut his left wrist and that the pocket knife that was used to do so was found by his body. But then this issue was dropped in the media. Were they changing their story midstream? Was this part of the, you know, the cover-up? Yeah, I'll argue, yeah, absolutely. Which is another reason why conveniently they say that, it's going to take several weeks for the toxicology reports to come back regarding Prince. But in the meantime, we're having his body cremated. Can you frickin' believe that? How in the world could they allow? Let's say that the whole idea to cremate him was the family's idea. Okay, fine. But you're going to tell me that the authorities are going to allow that while the investigation is still pending? Obviously it is. Without the toxicology report having come. How in the Christ, unless there is a cover-up, could they allow something like that? All they'd have to say is, hey, look, no, you want to cremate him and have a ceremony later, fine. And why would the family even argue that? Wouldn't they say, yeah, okay, let's wait. Why did the family even allow this, guys? You got to wonder. I read that at least some family members suspected that something was amiss, that maybe his doctor, apparently this bastard that found his body, Kornfeld. Apparently he was the one responsible. At least some family members expressed concern over this, thinking that, yeah, he might have been misdiagnosed, misdrugged, or whatever, you know. Why did they not wait to have the body cremated? This whole thing just reeks. Anyway, let's look at some motives here, as if we need any, you know. It's obvious there was a murder, but... And we know that one of the motives is all money. Of course, you get a better. But there's always other motives.
Constantly thinking naughty, hateful thoughts about the Jews? Do you find yourself actually wishing the gas chambers were real? Do you hate the sight of a yarmulke because it reminds you of the parasitic race that has their greedy little hands in just about everything? Well, then we have got something for you. Ask your doctor about Anti-Semitox. Anti-Semitox is a long-acting injectable lobotomy that assures you will never think those anti-Semitic thoughts ever again. May cause suicide, depersonalization, thoughts of ripping off your skin, your dick may fall off, and you may become infertile. I made the switch to Anti-Semitox. Now I don't even care if I'm a goyim slave. Thanks, Jews!
Guys, welcome back. I was just informed by Sean that I guess we lost the live stream. So only our two callers that are listening are able to hear this live right now, but it will be uploaded later. It'll be in the archives. Our little buddies in Tel Aviv must be at it again. God damn it. Sean also mentioned, and I guess you're probably hearing this on the show, occasional typing. That's probably me. If you hear any typing, folks, that's me, because I'm on my laptop and the microphone is right next to the, you know, next to the keyboard. I got to be more careful when I hit keys. I guess it's coming through pretty loud. I'll try to make that a minimum. Anyway, I'll be on my laptop tomorrow as well, so I got to be careful of that. Anyway, back to our notes here. So when it comes to carradine, there doesn't appear to be, at least not anything that I'm aware of, that he was very outspoken about corruption in Hollywood. Although you never know what went on behind the scenes. We do know that he was very critical of the Chinese triads, was working to, you know, expose a lot of their crimes. And some have speculated that they were behind his death. Yeah, that's possible. They might have played a role in it anyway. But you always got to consider the Hollywood star whacker factor as well. As far as what their motive would be, well, they really don't need one. A lot of the stars they've whacked over the years, it's just because the timing was right. They wanted to, you know, make some money off of the sale of their movie DVDs or... you know, it was a Jewish holiday coming up. Who knows? But when it comes to Williams, though, he was pretty outspoken. So that must have been at least part of the reason why they wanted him out of the way. For example, in one of his last stand-up comedy performances, he criticized Bush, the war on terror, Obama, the pharmaceutical industry, the economy, specifically the bailout, Congress, corrupt corporate campaign financing, and on it goes. Even though, you know, he served as Hollywood masters well over the years, is it possible that he was taken out for his above-cited public criticisms? This seems to be the case a lot. With celebrities, you know, later on in life, they come around, well, Prince, you know, he was serving their interests, demoralizing young teens, you know, on and on and on, early on, but then later wanting to make up for past sins, if you will, you know, he seemed to have been turning over a new leaf. So was that the case with Robin Williams as well? I bet he would have been an interesting guy to interview. It seems to me that, you know, he was fed up with a lot of things that he was seeing that he didn't approve of. There was that one movie. What the hell was it? Was it Primary Colors? I can't remember now what the hell. He played a professor at Harvard, and I think it was Leonardo DiCaprio played this genius who wasn't a student, but he was smarter than all the other students, you know. I'm pretty sure it was Primary Colors. Anyway, you know, there were several instances in that movie where Williams is talking about, you know, the corruption in the government and how we've been lied to. You know, he's admitting to DiCaprio's character. Now, you could say that he's just reading off of a script, but I think he was working some of his own personal ideas in there, you know, that again, that we see that in some of his stand-up routines that he did toward the end, expressing a total disgust. It seems like he was leaning in the same direction as George Carlin, using comedy as a vehicle, you know, to express disgust over, you know, government corruption. It seems like he was doing his, you know, his share of reading. And yeah, unfortunately, one of the references he cited in that movie, Primary Colors, was Chomsky. Christ. But nevertheless, guys, Chomsky, as much of a cover-up artist piece of crap that he is, he does have good stuff in his books. You would do well to read them. You know, he does have... He's great for exposing Cold War crap. He's a lying fraud artist when it comes to 9/11, the biggest false flag ever. He exposes other false flags, but he likes to cover that one up. That's just how the gatekeepers work. But nevertheless, you know, you can tell he must have obviously read Chomsky, and he knew that, you know, we were lied into all those frickin' Cold Wars under false pretenses. And that was quite a few years ago when that movie came out. So maybe since then he did more homework and became even more aware. You know, who knows? He might even have been aware of 9/11. I remember, I think it was one of those loose change numbskulls there, approached George Carlin just before he died. He was at a book signing, speaking engagement at a Barnes & Noble in New York, I think it was. And they asked him what he thought about 9/11. It's the only statement that I know of that he ever made about it. And he said, well, let's just say this. If you hold to the principle that you got to question everything your government tells you, then that should, you know, serve as your guide when it comes to that. In other words, you know, he didn't want to come out and say it in detail. But he made it clear that he didn't buy the story. You know, you can't believe anything your government tells you. You got to question everything they say. Well, yeah, there you go. So, yeah, I wonder if Robin Williams felt the same way. You know, I, like I said, I bet he would be an interesting person to interview. Not necessarily on air, because, again, people like that probably don't want to commit themselves, you know, get a lot of backlash, or maybe the family, whatever. But to get him alone and interview him, I bet that would have been an interesting discussion to talk to him. And once again, we don't even know what went on. There was probably a lot of other stuff that was never reported publicly, you know, that the public wasn't privy to. A lot of stuff that went on behind the scenes. I can see him as one that would have stood up to Hollywood BSers, to his, you know, to the handlers. I could see him having been, having been disgusted with a lot of the politicking that went on. And that could have been a very big part of the reason why they, you know, would want to off the guy. Anyway, that concludes that discussion. Let me see here. there's any number of directions that was going to go from here. What do we get another? Yeah, we got another 20 minutes. I'll start another set of notes here. Kind of going on a spree here with strange celebrity deaths. I've done numerous series on this, you know, years ago back on Oracle. So let's look at a few more here. This one is good old Mr. Hunter S. Thompson. When I started looking into this guy's death, wow. I already knew there was some troubles with him. I never realized how bad they were, though. Initially, years ago, when he was reported to have supposedly killed himself on February 20th of 2005, and then I heard shortly thereafter that he was questioning 9/11, I thought, wow, there we go. This is, you know, they're killing another truther, you know. And that may, in fact, have been the reason why they killed him, but guys, he was no truther. Unless maybe somehow, toward, you know, he was in his, getting into his senior years at the time. Maybe he was wanting to make amends, but nah, I don't know, man. This guy was just a raging piece of crap. Raging piece of crap, as we're going to see. But anyway, he was 67 at the time, said to have committed suicide. This was only a couple months, by the way, after the so-called suicide of Gary Webb. And we know that wasn't a suicide. Gary Webb, the former reporter for the San Jose Mercury, who had done a lot of work exposing CIA drug trafficking. He died from two bullet wounds to the head. Well, what do you know? How do you shoot yourself twice in the head? Anyway, 2 months later, Hunter Thompson. And so, you know, at the time, I was putting two and two together, or at least I thought I was, and figuring, oh yeah, they killed Thompson, just like they killed Gary Webb. You know, two truthers within 2 months of each other. But folks, knowing what I now know, there was a far cry difference between Mr. Thompson and Mr. Webb. Far cry. You can't even make a comparison, sorry. But anyway, here's how the story was reported about him supposedly being killed over wanting to expose 9/11. Canada's Globe and Mail, Canadian newspaper, reported on February 26th of 2005, quote, Hunter telephoned me, his friend Paul William Roberts, on February 19th, the night before his death. He sounded scared. It wasn't always easy to understand what he said, particularly over the phone. He mumbled. Yet when there was something he really wanted you to understand, you did. He'd been working on a story about the World Trade Center attacks and had stumbled across what he felt was hard evidence showing that the towers had been brought down not by the airplanes that flew into them, but by explosive charges set off in their foundations. Now he thought that someone was out to stop him publishing it. And then he quotes from him, they're going to make it look like suicide, he said. I know how these bastards think. So according to this guy, Hunter was expressing, you know, concern, fear that they were going to kill him because he was coming out with this. Well, you know, that may or may not be true, but it doesn't redeem him from his past misdeeds. This was one corrupt bastard, I got to tell you, as we're going to see. Anyway. Yeah, so let's look at some background of this guy. he was known for his important, for his rampant, I should say, drug abuse, and for getting personally involved in the stories that he wrote about. For example, he once lived with the Hell's Angels motorcycle gang for 2 years back in the 60s. While he was researching his book, Hell's Angels, A Strange and Terrible Saga. But it's clear that Thompson hung out with far more unsavory characters than the Hell's Angels over the years. And he also engaged in some incredibly unsavory behavior, to put it mildly. In his book, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, he wrote about receiving adrenochrome. Adrenochrome is a supposed powerful hallucinogen allegedly obtained from the pineal gland of a human shortly after they die or are killed. You have to get it fresh from, you know, a freshly dead or freshly killed person. He admitted in his book that he got the this drug, this hormone or whatever it is, from a Satanist who told him that it would give him the best high that he's ever had. Now, how would a Satan get a hold of this? Obviously, from one of their sacrificial victims. At least, you know, that's what he wanted you to believe in his book. Is it true? Some would say, oh, he's just exaggerating. Really? You think so? He had to get it from somebody who freshly died or was freshly killed. This book was made into a movie in 1998, as it turns out, with the same title as the book, which starred Johnny Depp, who played the lead character based on Thompson. I'm sorry, guys. Johnny Depp creeps me out. I don't like the guy. I don't like him. There's something about him just doesn't ring with me. Anyway, one scene depicts the two main characters getting high on this adrenochrome. As Depp's character ingests it, he says, quote, "There's only one source for this stuff, the adrenaline gland from a living human body who dies as a result of extracting it, of course." The star then replies, "Satan worshippers kill 6 or 8 people every day. All they want is the blood. They'll take people right off the street if they have to." Again, based on Thompson's book. So in other words, we can get this drug if we want very easily. Let's just hook up with some Satanists. The implication is, in the movie, and again, in his book, that that's exactly what he did. He got in touch with Satanists, not caring, obviously, that, you know, this was a murder victim. "I just want to get this drug and try it." What a sick bastard. Then, referring to a woman recently murdered by Satanists in the movie, he says, quote, "Then they'll cut all kinds of holes in her head and suck out the blood." Just absolutely mind-blowing. Anyway, some say that Thompson was just joking around, you know, again, when he gave this account in his book, but tons of evidence says otherwise. For example, a man named Rusty Nelson, who was the personal photographer of accused pedophile Larry King of Franklin cover-up fame, you know, DeCamp's book there, anyway, he said that Hunter Thompson offered him $100,000 in 1988 to shoot a snuff film involving a child, which you know, horrifyingly, he turned down the offer, but he said that Thompson offered him $100,000 to make such a film. So is it, you know, does it seem like he was making up the story about hooking up with Satanists to get this adrenaline drug? No, doesn't seem out of character for him at all, does it? Paul Bonacci, furthermore, who was one of the victims of the Franklin child abuse scandal, later said that he was forced to participate in a pedophile snuff film at the Bohemian Grove at the base of the Big Owl statue. I've talked about that before. Regarding that film, he said that a man named Hunter Thompson was the photographer and the videographer, I should say, for this project. He mentioned, at the time, he didn't even know who Hunter Thompson was. He just mentioned some guy named Hunter Thompson. It has to be this Hunter Thompson that we know was into this type of thing. He was the videographer, guys, for that snuff film that Paul Bonacci was forced to take part in at the Bohemian Grove. If you've ever heard the Franklin cover-up, and let me tell you, I don't recommend it. I mean, it's a good book to read if you want to see just how sick these bastards are, but it's very disturbing, very disturbing. It goes into horrific detail. I apologize. There's a neighbor running some frickin', I don't know, leaf blower or something. It's really obnoxious. I hope it isn't screwing up the recording here. Anyway, but there's more. Look at what Thompson wrote in his 2004 book, Hey Rube, R-U-B-E. He said, "The autumn months are never a calm time in America. There is always a rash of kidnapping and abductions of school children in the football months. Preteens of both sexes are traditionally seized and grabbed off the streets by gangs of organized perverts who traditionally give them as Christmas gifts to each other to be personal sex slaves and playthings." How in the world would he know that? If you read this paragraph here, it sounds like he was against this. He's calling them perverts, right? But obviously he was one himself. Bonacci said he was the videographer of the snuff film that he was forced to participate in as a kid. Well, God damn it, there you go. As if all of this isn't bad enough, just look at what he said on a 1988 edition of The Late Night Show with David Letterman. After Letterman asked him what he liked to do for fun. Guys, this is astonishing. I never saw this interview. I'll have to see if I can find it on YouTube sometime. Just reading about it makes my skin crawl. I imagine Letterman must have been freaking out, wishing he never invited this guy on his show. Was Thompson on drugs at the time? Or maybe he didn't need to be. Maybe he was just genuinely this frickin' bizarre. Listen to what he said. Again, Letterman asked him, "What do you like to do in your spare time? You know, what do you like to do for fun?" He said, "I like to kill." Letterman then asked him, "And when you say kill, you're talking about neighbors?" You know, he was trying to make light of it, you know, make a joke out of it. Like, obnoxious neighbors? You could tell he was very uncomfortable. Anyway, then Thompson replied, "We don't want to talk about shooting people, do we?" In other words, he's making it clear when he says, "I like to kill." He's not talking about going out and hunting. He's talking about killing people. But he's telling Letterman, "We don't really want to talk about that, do we?" Letterman then said, "No, but you're confusing when you say you like to kill." Next, Thompson returned these incredibly bizarre comments. He said, "Yeah, I'm not teasing, though. I used to like to kill, but when I realized that I was hunting in order to kill, I quit because I was not hunting for meat. I was hunting because I liked to kill. What kind of hunting, though, is he talking about? Because he just got done saying, you don't really want to talk about killing people, do you? You know what he's talking about there, guys, the obvious snuff film or films that he had participated in. We know he did participate in at least one, the Bonacci film, ladies and gentlemen, at the Bohemian freaking Grove. Letterman then asked, have you talked to anyone about this? In other words, you need some help there, buddy. Have you gotten any help for this? Letterman must have been crawling in his skin. It was a most incredibly awkward moment, and even the audience was noticeably and understandably uncomfortable, or so I'm told in the description of the film, of the footage. I didn't see it myself. I'm going to have to look it up sometime and watch it. My God, man, what a freak. This guy was a raging goddamn psycho. But that wasn't all. Thompson then went on to say that he likes the Jesuits because, quote, they're smart and mean. And then he mumbled something about having a neo-religious worldview. What in the hell? He idolized the Jesuits. You know who else said that? Was Cecil John Rhodes, the founder of this secret society, Rhodes Scholarship Roundtable Group. He said that he idolized the Jesuit order and wanted to fashion his little secret society. Anyway, at another point in this same interview, when Thompson was talking about George Bush Sr., who was running for president at the time, he said, quote, I've been to Hillbilly. God damn it, is that obnoxious as all frickin' raging hell. Sorry, guys, for that bullshit outside. I want to go out and pound the bastard. Anyway, the Hillbilly he's talking about here, that's the name of the Bush family caucus there at the Grove Camp. Very interesting. This guy was so goddamn stupid. Anyway, there's a few more points to cover. We'll do that tomorrow. Catch you then, guys. Take care.
Buddy come from?
Well, little Jimmy, you see, the Jews print our money out of thin air and loan it back to us with interest, thus enslaving us through their usury.
Well, I never knew Jews were so good with money.
Yes, little Jimmy, that's why the Jews have been kicked out of over 109 places in 79 different countries for doing the same exact thing.
Wow. They certainly know how to parasite.
They sure do. That's why I bank with Shekelstein Credit Union. Shekelstein Credit Union, printing money out of thin air and enslaving the goyim since 1913. Shekelstein Credit Union. They sure know how to parasite.